ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय विलक्षणः स्थूल सूक्ष्मात् देहात् आत्मा ईक्षिता स्वदृक् यथा अग्नि दारुणः दाह्यात् दादकः अन्या प्रकाशः विलक्षणः स्थूल सूक्ष्मात् देहात् आत्मैक्षिता स्वदृक् यथाग्निर्दारुणा दाह्यात् दादकोऽन्यात् प्रकाशः विलक्षणः स्थूल सूक्ष्मात् देहात् आत्मैक्षिता स्वदृक् यथाग्निर्दारुणो दाह्यात् दाह्यकोऽन्या प्रकाशकः विलक्षणः स्थूल सूक्ष्मात् देहादात्मैक्षित स्वदृक् यथाग्निर्दारुणो दाह्यात् दाह्यकोऽन्या प्रकाशकः विलक्षणा स्थूल सूक्ष्मात् देहादात्मैक्षित स्वदृक् यथाग्निर्दारुणो दाह्यात् दाह्यकोऽन्या प्रकाशकः विलक्षणः स्थूल सूक्ष्मात् देहादात्मैक्षिता स्वदृक् यथाग्निदारुणो दाह्यात् दाह्यकोऽन्या प्रकाशकः लक्षणा स्थूल सूक्ष्मात् देहादाक्ष्मैक्षिता स्वदृक् यथाग्निदारुणो दाह्यात् दायकोऽन्या प्रकाशकः लेडीज लक्षणा स्थूल सूक्ष्मात् देहादात्मैक्षिता स्वदृक् यथाग्निर्दारुणो दाह्यात् दायकोऽन्या प्रकाशकः Vilakshanaha, having different characteristics, sthula from the gross, sukshmat and the subtle, dehat from the body, atma, the spirit soul, ikshita, the seer, swadrik, self-enlightened, yatha, just as, agni, fire, darunaha, from firewood, the hayat, from that which is to be burned, dahayakaha, which that which burns, anya, other, prakashaha, prakashakaha, that which illuminates. Translation proper by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Just as fire which burns and illuminates is different from firewood, which is to be burned to give illumination. Similarly, the seer within the body, the self-enlightened spirit soul, is different from the material body, which is to be illuminated by consciousness. Thus, the spirit soul and the body possess different characteristics and are separate entities. purport. It is analytically demonstrated in this verse that one should never falsely identify the ego with the material body. Such misidentification is called false ego or material illusion. The following question may be raised. Since it is commonly known that the Supreme Personality of Godhead enlightens the conditioned soul, why is the term Svadrik or self-enlightened used in this verse? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that all the Supreme Personality of Godhead certainly furnishes consciousness to the living entity. The living entity, being endowed with the potency of the Lord, has himself the capacity to revive and expand his pure consciousness. He may therefore be considered in a secondary sense self-enlightened. The example may be given that gold or silver domes brilliantly reflect the rays of the sun. Although the light comes from the sun, the inherent properties of gold and silver can also be considered causes for the brilliant reflection, since other substances do not possess suitable properties to reflect the sunlight. Similarly, the spirit soul can be considered Svadrik or self-enlightened because he possesses characteristics by which he can brilliantly reflect the potency of the personality of Godhead, thus illuminating his existential situation, just as gold or silver dome shines due to its reflective properties. A nice example is given in this verse to illustrate the different characteristics of the body and the soul. Fire, which burns and illuminates, is always different from that which is burned for illumination. It may be said, however, that fire is present in an unmanifest form within wood. Similarly, in the conditioned life of ignorance, the spirit soul is present, though unmanifest, within the body. The enlightened condition of the living entity can be compared to the act of arousing fire within wood. Just as fire quickly burns wood to ashes, similarly, the spirit soul, when enlightened, burns to ashes the darkness of ignorance. We are conscious of the body. Therefore, it may be said that the body is illuminated by consciousness, which is the energy or symptom of the spirit soul. Identifying the body and the soul as one is just as foolish as considering fire and wood to be the same. In both cases, the intimate circumstantial connection between fire and wood, or between the soul and the body, does not alter the fact that fire is different from wood, or that soul is always different from the body. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutapada Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Shahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. We're reading from the 11th canto, chapter 10, text 9, the nature of fruitive activity. This verse may come as a bit of a surprise when we look at the fact that we are talking about the 11th canto. The 11th canto and the 12th canto is the culmination of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So obviously, Sukadev Goswami Maharaj is on the last day of his narration. And not by the last day, probably the last few hours of his narration. And Maharaj Parikshit has heard extensively, along with so many thousands of sages of a very high caliber, with a deep realization, with deep self-realization and deep insight into the nature of the material and spiritual world. Such people are sitting in the audience in front of Sukadev Goswami. And yet, it is surprising that we're talking about the body and the soul. We're talking about the difference between the body and the soul in the 11th canto. After the Ras Panchadhyaya is over, Krishna's intimate pastime of Vrindavan are over, everything of a very deep, personal, and almost sometimes even esoteric nature has been spoken about in great detail, rather, never ever spoken in the past by any Bhagavad Kathakara, that was spoken for the first time in Sukadev Goswami. And yet, at the culmination, Maharaj Parikshit has to be told again that please understand that you are not the wood, you are the fire within the wood. It is very surprising. And that brings us to the very important understanding of how Krishna consciousness is so practical and it is so fundamental. Even ourselves, some of us who are here as students of the Srimad Bhagavatam, over the years we have heard also Bhagavatam many classes, if not dozens, hundreds. Some of us have heard thousands of classes by now. Literally thousands of classes by very exalted personalities who have deep insight into the Bhagavatam. Our spiritual masters have spoken. But is it not true when we look at ourselves that even now that we are hearing Bhagavatam, maybe in our Gopinath Mandir we are doing it for the second time, right? Or third time. Second time. There is a second cycle of 18,000 verses getting over with the next. Before the year ends, probably we'll finish the Bhagavatam second time fully, right? So, but how many of us can really claim that we have understood this point as yet? What is spoken in this verse? Have we all deeply, thoroughly, undeniably convinced of the difference of the body and the soul? It comes as a very strong reminder, very strong reminder, and a call for deepening our seriousness to understand this basic fact. There is no question of understanding deeper aspects of Krishna consciousness if this first step is not cleared. And all conditioning which we may have, or rather we do have, is at best only theoretical and only intellectual, but not realized, not yet, let's say, realized, right? And therefore, in the 11th canto, we are blessed by Prabhupada's disciples and Sukadev Goswami to again remind us that we need to work on our basic understanding of Dehi no asmin yatha dehe. It is striking that Krishna had to use that in the second chapter and tell us that you are not Deha, but you are Dehi. You are the one residing within the body and not the body, right? The same thing Krishna is speaking here again in the 11th canto. Life, the way life goes on in this world, even if one is not a spiritually minded person, this fact, the way the Lord has made the world, the way Brahma has made this world, is that repeatedly and again in every corner of life, this fact comes starkly in front of your face that you are not this body. A person is brought to the casualty. He had chest pain at home, or he was gasping for air, or something happened to him, and he was sitting there reading his newspaper or watching the television or whatever he was doing. But suddenly something happened and said, "Kuch ho raha hai, something is happening to me." And the relatives know there is something serious. Maybe he's sweating, maybe he's a little dizzy. Maybe they can see that something is impendingly critical happening here to the person whom they love. Put him in the car or an ambulance and they rush him to the hospital and said, "Sorry, sir." The CMO sees the body, feels the pulse, takes an ECG, looks at the eye, pinches him here and there to see for pain sensation. An ECG is a flat line. He said, "Sorry, sir. We can't do much. He's no more." Right? How many times we have seen this? How many times we have heard this? Right? We have heard it many, many, many times. Right? That a few seconds back, our loved one was watching television, his favorite program, or watching his reading his favorite newspaper, and within the next 5 seconds, he is declared no more. Right? Immediately it comes to our heart that the person is gone. My father is gone. My mother is gone. Right? It hits us very hard. And because it hits us so hard, the first response is, "Please, doctor, can you just see, something must be there. I mean, can you not do something? Can you not give him a shock or something?" Because it is so hard on the consciousness, you just can't even accept it. So first response is denial. First response is obvious. Nobody just accepts that it can ever happen. Said, "There must be something you can do, doctor. Can you just call the senior person, somebody, your cardiologist or intensivist, somebody. Can you do something for him? Sorry, look at this. Yeah, I would have done something if the line was having some waves. He has no waves anymore." Right? So, way life is arranged for all of us in what we call as Mrityu Loka, the way we are living, it is just so powerful a lesson on a daily basis to force you to understand even if you are so crippled-minded or hard-hearted or insensitive or deeply illusioned, that this is not, you are not in the right consciousness. You are not this material body. Right? And of course, those people who, because your loved one is gone, the next response is to, first of all, denial, and then it hits you very hard, and you break into a cry. You just cry, you lament so bad that your father is gone, or your loved one is gone. Right? And then you know that the elder son has to go. The elder son is crying. He knows he has to do this vidhi of putting fire to his body of his dear father. It is so clear that the father is not there. This is his body. It is just so clear. It is just so obvious. There is no mistaking over there that my father is still there. It is just so clear that I am putting... He would never do this to his living father, obviously. Putting fire to his body. It is just so obvious that it is his external dress which is lying on the crematorium ground. Right? Everything which is arranged in Vedic life is for this purpose. When we look at it with a sense of scrutiny, then we see that from the beginning of life to the end of life and even beyond life, every sacred information given in our scriptures is to simply bring to light this fact, to always live in this consciousness that, my dear sir, you are not this body. Right? Obviously the Garbhadhan Sanskar is for that. It starts with the fact that the father and mother understand that we both will come together to provide the material body to our child, our expected child, but we have no control over the child's consciousness. We can at the most provide a genetically governed body based on your genes and my genes, etc. But we have no control over what type of person. We will be able to govern to some extent the body of the person with features of the eyes and the hair and the limbs and the fairness and the blue eyes or whatever, whatever. It will be genetically determined by our genes, but we know for sure that we are not going to determine the person who will live within that body. Therefore, let us do Garbhadhan Sanskar and see if we can get a better quality of body, a better quality of soul from a more purified realm of consciousness. So it starts from there. The Vedic conception starts from there. So obviously you know, the potential father and mother know that this is, you know, this is, we are going to invite a soul to come in. This is not nothing to do with us. It is based on, it is beyond us and based on grace, based on prayers, based on blessings. And then as a child also grows, you know, then you could do various vidhis and samskaras. All that is ultimately to bring to the person to understand that your soul has to be purified. Every sanskar is a purificatory rite. What are we purifying? It is not panchakarma of the body which is purifying the body. You know, the upanayan sanskar has nothing to do with the child's body, that he is given some enemas and bastis and this and that. He is given some mantras, some sandhyas to chant, right? Oh, he's supposed to go beyond, right? You are a 7-year-old child, okay, now start doing Ramadan or start doing the samskar or whatever, whatever, right? So you are put into a situation where you are expected to perform some tapasya. You can't eat before doing your sandhya. You can't eat before doing this, before doing that, right? Some tapasya is there. Why am I supposed to do this, parent, my father? Why am I supposed to do this, my dear mother? It's good for your soul. It's good for your consciousness. It's good for you. It's good for you, not for your body. Right? So we go like that. We go like that. Huh? And therefore, the whole life is actually based on that. And then, of course, when the person dies, then, of course, we know that there is some vidhi on the 13th day, there's something on the first year, the first on the second year, something, different things people call talk differently. Something said, till it is 5 years, you do something. Arey Baba, the person has gone 5 years back. What am I supposed to do with the person now? 5 years back, my father has gone. Am I supposed to do some ritual? Yes, my dear son, you must do something for my father. Feed the crow. Why am I supposed to feed the crow? No, there is a connection. There is a story in the Ramayana, so and so. The crow is connected intimately with the Pitraloka and this and that. Some story is there. Right? If the crow eats Vishnu Prasad, it goes to your father. So it is so powerful. It is so powerful to understand. It is so powerful to understand. It is such a stark reminder that what if I am so much convinced about doing something for my father or mother after death, what about doing something for when I'm alive? Then why am I not living my life in living state with this understanding? When a person goes to the deity room of the Lord for deity worship, the first thing he does is Achman, offers flowers to his spiritual master, does, and before he starts the upacharas, he does what is called as Bhuta Shuddhi. The Bhuta Shuddhi is a prayer. The Bhuta Shuddhi is to bring to awareness of what is my real state of being. Who am I? And who is worshipping Radha Krishna, God Nitai, Gopal? Who is worshipping him? Is this person with this flesh and body and black colored eyes and brown colored skin, is he worshipping him? The Bhuta Shuddhi makes it very clear that, my dear sir, it is not your body who is doing this. The Bhuta means the body. Bhuta means the body. Shuddhi. The living entity has to be purified, right? So then, when you do a Bhuta Shuddhi with proper consciousness, then immediately when you enter the altar of the Lord, you know that you are not entering as so and so person. And that you leave behind, even if before you enter the altar, or even if you enter the deity room, your material identity is outside the deity room. And hopefully when we go out of the deity room, we won't take it back. Usually we take off a dress, and then you come out of the deity room, and you wear your new dress, and you go out. When you wear the new dress, again, you take back your consciousness with you. You say, okay, now I'm so and so again. Start working like that. But we are doing this as a daily ritual or a weekly ritual or a monthly ritual, whatever we are doing in a deity room, is with this very powerful understanding. And therefore we chant this mantra by Mahaprabhu Chaitanya. Naham Shudro, right? So you first deny that I am not the Brahman, I am not a Kshatriya, I am not a Grihastha, I am not a Sannyasi, I am nothing of these things, I am not part of the Varna, I am not part of the Ashram. Our basic understanding is I am Varna and Ashram. We talk about it so much, Varna, Ashram, Varna, Ashram, Varna, Ashram. But when you enter the tea room, no Varna, no Ashram, not a man, not a woman, nothing. Then who are you? Who is worshipping Krishna? Gopi Bhartrupada Kamalayor, Das, Das, Dasanu Das. And when you enter the deity room with that consciousness, then you really connect with the deity properly. Then actually it's your yoga, bhakti yoga, is to connect with the Lord whom you are worshipping, with flowers, or incense, or dress, or chandan, arti, mantra, bathing, shringar, whatever you are doing inside the altar is... When you connect with that, then you are worshipping the Lord properly. Otherwise, whatever fancy dressing you have done, it's nice to look at. And yet, the purificatory benefit obtained thereof may not be so strong. Right? And therefore, it is so important to do that Bhuta Shuddhi properly. Right? To chant the mantras properly. Because it invests in the pujari a state of consciousness. It is a conscious worship of the Lord. Krishna consciousness means being conscious of everything. It starts first being conscious of your body. And I'm not the body. It starts being first conscious of your body. This is my body. Right? Then the food you eat, it starts when you're conscious of the body, then you become conscious of the tongue, it is said. Right? It starts, your spiritual consciousness starts with adav, with the tongue. You start becoming conscious of your soul by focusing on your tongue. Right? That's the gateway to your soul. The tongue is a gateway not only for the food, but it's a gateway to your soul. Sevon mukhehi, mukhehi jiva adav. Within your mukha is the jiva, that is your adav, your first step towards. So when you serve the tongue with food, which is Krishna prasadam, with the holy name, the holy mantras, right, then your spiritual life actually starts. Right? So become conscious of your tongue. Right? So conscious, so it starts, almost it starts, spiritual life starts with conscious eating. You become discriminated, oh yeah, I cannot eat this. This is forbidden food, this is sinful, this is made up of violence, this is tamogoni food, I cannot eat this. I will not do this. Right? So you become very discriminative because you know that this food is good for my soul. And even if onion garlic may be good for my body, I will avoid it. Some will say, well, why don't you eat onion garlic, you guys? You know, it's good cholesterol and this and that. We don't care about cholesterol, okay? We don't care about all this stuff. Cholesterol and this and that. We don't care about that, right? We have better methods to take care of cholesterol. Maybe we'll take a pill if required. But we will not allow ourselves to eat onion garlic just for cholesterol's sake. Because I'm not this body. And my acharyas have told me that this is bad for the soul. You've got to stomach and I will not eat that. Tea may also have some good medical value. Tea is good for people know that tea improves metabolism. Everyone knows that, but we will not have tea. So, Krishna consciousness is not about health. Krishna consciousness is about reviving your original consciousness. And if something is good for your health, you take it along with you. If it doesn't, you just reject it. That's not a consideration. The primary consideration is this good for my soul? That's it. That's the whole thing. Right? So, conscious eating, conscious dressing. Right? You dress in a particular way to remind you of, oh, I'm a devotee. I wear dhoti kurta. I wear kanthi and tilak wherever I go. Why? It reminds me that I am a servant of the Lord. The moment I go to the bathroom, right, and I finish my bathing process, I apply holy tilak for 12 parts of my body. It's a reminder. My day starts with that. The tilak is a strong reminder in a devotee's life. The body is the temple of the Lord. And my Lord resides in my heart. He's on the altar also, of course. He's in the heart of all living beings. And he's the same Lord as Gopinath, Vrindavan Chandra, Radha Madan Mohan, Vrindavan Bihari are in my heart also. And because he resides in my heart, my body is a temple of the Lord. Just like this is a temple of the Lord. There have been 9 doors to this temple, let's say, for example. So there are 9 doors to my body also. Right? And therefore I sanctify this body with chanting. Not just I don't just put the tilak, correct? I chant the mantra, Keshava, Narayana, Madhava, Govinda. That reminds me this is for the Lord's seva. In this way, Krishna consciousness is such a beautiful, beautiful process. Nothing superior can exist in this world. That every part of the day actually is a stark reminder that you are doing this for your soul. And when we take prasadam also, we do it. See, what happens is, what can happen is the illusory energy being so overwhelmingly present around us can break us down into a state of being where everything becomes mechanistic. And that's where we start losing on the tremendous potential benefits which each of these small rituals are here to offer us. Applying of tilak can offer us tremendous benefit in the very beginning of the day at 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. 6 a.m. whatever time you got up. It offers you that time when you can remember for the whole 24 hours this body is the temple of the Lord. Right? But we make it so mechanistic, and we run to the next thing you have to do, or wear the clothes, come to the Mangala Arati, it's frisked. Right, that's it, done. But if you take a little more, 5 seconds, 10 seconds more, and a little bit more deliberate about it, right, it would make a big difference. It would make a big difference. Definitely it would make a big difference. Right? So, the whole reason why this is being said here in great detail, and I'm even happy to see that, you know, we should be happy that even Prabhupada's disciples are so grounded in Prabhupada's state of understanding of the Bhagavatam, that they are not skipping giving purports even the 11th canto. I would have thought, you know, it's a basic sloka and body and soul, and I mean this is already done so many times before, but there is an elaborate purport for even this basic verse. And I can see this is the language of Hridayanandas Goswami, because I've heard him before. This is his language. And he writes like this. Right? And therefore, it is just so pleasing to know that they're doing this, because the illusory energy is very thick. It's very thick. In 1930, if you went to the Yamuna, to the holy river of Yamuna, right? And you dropped a coin from the Keshi Ghat, you'll be able to see the coin on the floor of the riverbed. Right? That's how pure was. Well, she's still pure, but that's how clean, let's say, she was. That's how clean she was. Right? And now, after 90 years, you cannot see anything. Right? And that's the state of our consciousness also. That the mirror, the mind is the mirror. Just like a coin, a brilliant coin, a gold or silver coin, will shine at the bottom of the river. Even our soul lying at the bottom of our mind will shine forth through the transparency of our mind with the brilliant qualities of the soul. Satchitananda Vigraha. It will shine like that. Right? But because the mind is kalushit, it's contaminated with the anarthas, it doesn't shine. And even we are just seeing the river flowing, but it's a dark, dirty, mucky river flowing. And you're not able to see the soul underlying the subtle part of the mind, the remote part of the mind. And the whole process of material energy is to make the illusion thicker and thicker and thicker. So thick that you can never see your soul. It makes us so absolutely bahir mukha by sensory stimulation. We must, you know, Devotees, of course, have a great advantage that they have transcendental knowledge through the spiritual masters, right? And yet, even devotees are potentially vulnerable to the glamour and glitter of the material energy. And who brings that? The digital world. The digital world is designed primarily to make a person completely bahirmukh and create for the senses tremendous sensory titillation and stimulation. Right? So the more your senses are outside, on the screen or on the this and that, right? It is so fascinating to the mind and senses that you just feel that this is the reality. So it's important for us devotees to, you know, who are practicing the science of becoming more antarmukh, doing things for our soul and our consciousness, and doing less and less things only for the body's pleasure, and doing more and more things for Krishna's pleasure, right? To be able to make that differentiation from doing more things for Krishna's pleasure and less things for my pleasure, right? We may have to be very conscious of the glitter and glamour which material energy is tremendously creating. It is interesting to note how this began. When you think about it, that Mahaprabhu Chaitanya came to this world in 1486, right? And that's about the same time industrial revolution began. The whole focus of science towards making more scientific gadgets, making life more comfortable, began in the early 15th century, exactly the same time as the Yuga Avatar came to the world. And there is a strong reason why it happens. Because Maya Devi wants to be always one step before Krishna. The moment she knows the Yuga Avatar is coming, and he will give a process which will be so powerful that it can defeat me. It can defeat all my power to be in this world. And I don't want to get defeated. Right? There is an intense competition between Maya and Krishna in this world. Though we may say on one side she is Maya's servant, that's all right to understand on the higher perspective. But actually, if you go to see, she is competing for the spirit soul. Who will grab the soul? Right? And we are the target. Who will be capturing, conquering, controlling the spirit soul of this world? Will it be Krishna or will it be Maya? So there is intense competition to get. Just like we have in medical science, we have called receptors. Right? When a drug goes in the body, there is a receptor. So whether the drug goes or some herb goes, the receptor is on the cell wall. What latches onto the cell wall is called a receptor. Right? There are thousands of receptors on every cell wall of the cell. So whether a cancerous stimulus will latch onto the cell wall, or a good food will latch on, and what will upgrade the genes and downgrade the genes, etc., etc. Right? So that's called receptor on the cell wall. Similarly, our consciousness is like a receptor. Who will latch onto the consciousness? Will the Maya capture you or Krishna? Is a constant struggle. The constant competition between these opposite illusory forces and divine forces is to get the soul. Right? And therefore, having detected that the Yuga Avatar is coming, Maya Devi started increasing the fascinating world of science to create gadgets. The cars came in, the roads came in, and all the stuff came in. The telephone came in, the bulb came in, and all that thing happened. The atom was discovered, and atom was then broken, and things happened. So, you know, the whole world of science, just sort of mushrooming growth of science, knowing that now the Yuga Avatar is going to penetrate deeply into Sarvanagar Adigram. So before Sarvanagar Adigram takes place, she went into Sarvanagar Adigram also. Right? And therefore there's a competition. Who goes into the Sarvanagar Adigram before? Right? So the net is going to the Nagram. The net is going. The illusory energy is called net, of course, right? Internet. Maya Jal. Jal means net. Right? So she is going to every town and village before we can go. And there were people like, you know, Rupa Raghunath Prabhu and all our dedicated devotees like Lokanath Swami Maharaj, Padayatris and all the other devotees who go to villages. They are doing a hard job. They are doing a tremendously wonderful job to go to Nigadi and Satara and this Sangli, a remote village, Kolhapur somewhere, villages in America, whatever. They want to enter into the Gram, Nagar and Gram before they do, or even if she is already there, somehow to get the spirit to understand, well, this is illusory. This is so temporary. This is so flickering. Right? The sensory stimulation is so flickering. It has absolutely no substantial long-term existence. The senses can only get stimulated so much and only for a short time. They cannot be indefinitely stimulated. Intrinsically, the senses are made to not get stimulated for a long time. Intrinsically. That's the way it is designed. The body is designed like that. Right? You can take one rasgulla, taste bud, will give some pleasure sensation. There are nerves. Pleasure and pain nerves, pleasure nerves. There are different nerves going along the track, you know, to different parts of our brain, spinothalamic track and so on and so. So, there is a particular taste bud, which is a nerve there, nerve ending under the taste bud. You did rasgulla, right? Okay, your rasgulla is there. The nerves get stimulated. It is nice. One. Can I have one more? Prabhuji, all right. Extra hai kya? Ah, so Prabhuji, bahut saare le le. Okay, so he is very merciful. That devotee is very kind to you. He says, okay, it takes two. You know one, you get one free. You get two more, right? You eat five rasgullas, okay? Now, everyone knows that even if we had a bucket full or a drum full of rasgullas, and he said, Prabhu, ye sab aapka hai. This whole drum is yours, right? After eating the sixth and seventh rasgulla, it will not give us the same pleasure. And if we really dared into eating 10, we are in big trouble. Because the sugar is going to rise so much, you're going to feel dizzy. Sugar will jump from 90 to maybe 220 suddenly. Right? And if you had even more, the senses cannot be indefinitely stimulated. Yahi samsparshaja bhoga dukhayo enavate. Then Krishna is very clear about it. Adi antamanta kaunteya, my dear Arjun and my dear children who are after Arjun, please understand that this sensory stimulation, the way I have designed it, by samsparsha ja, ja means janma, this sparsha of the rasgulla with the tongue is supposed to have a adi and a anta, right? And every sense, the ear, the genitals, the stomach, the skin, blood, everything, all the senses, all the gnanendriya, karmendriya, everything will have a adi and a anta. And the Bhagavad Gita warns all sadhakas, nateshwaramate buddha. My dear children, if you are buddha, not buddha means not follower of buddha, follower, if you are really a buddhi, right, then nateshwaramate, then if you are ramate, it will not be the source of your pleasure, okay? Please understand Krishna is saying, is giving us such beautiful lessons, to warn all of us children to not fall into the trap of illusory, sensory, temporary titillation of the senses and the mind, but go within for the soul. Go within for the soul. Do activities which are soul related. Why? Because Krishna is eternal and the soul is eternal. They are not temporary. So when you latch on to your spiritual senses, when you latch on to your spiritual mind, your spiritual senses, when you hear Krishna Katha, you're investing into a long-term stimulation of your sensory, of your spiritual senses. You're activating your spiritual ears. By touching the deities of the Lord, you're activating your spiritual sense of touch. Because the spirit soul also is a person. And he also has senses, which are rudimentary seed-like state when he's in the body. It is like 1/10 tip of the hair. But he has a body, which is in a seed-like state. When he's planted in the soil in the spiritual world, it will flower into a gopi or a donkey or a peacock or whatever. It will flower into something beautiful with an eternal body. But when he's here, he's in a seed-like state. But he has it in Nitya Siddha Deha, in that seed-like state. Just like we are born, when we are born, we are in a seed-like state in this material world, right? But then eventually, 9 months, you form a body. Male, female, black, brown, Japanese, Indian, Mongolian, whatever. Right? So in a seed-like state here. So by feeding our spiritual senses with prasadam, with katha, with watering the tulsi, touching the deity, touching a pure devotee's body, touching the Srimad Bhagavatam, reading it and understanding it. So feeding our senses, feeding our consciousness, feeding all our various parts of our existence with the understanding, using the body, the body is useful because the body is the entry to the soul. Right? So the devotees are not trying to reject the body like the Mayavadis. They accept the body, they embrace the body, they welcome the body, they maintain it in fact, they maintain good health, they take herbs and yoga and this and that, right? Because they want to keep the body fit so it can keep on receiving the inputs of Krishna consciousness till they die. Till they die in this body. Right? So therefore, maintaining the body also has a spiritual purpose. Right? And therefore, we cannot but just appreciate the beauty of the process which Prabhupada has given us. It is just absolutely so fascinating and beautiful. Huh? And the more we appreciate with gratitude in our hearts, the more we'll embrace this process with so much more enthusiasm. Hmm? And with so much more eagerness. How can I get even more and more and more of this? Right? How can I hear more? Serve more? How I can love more Krishna and the devotees? How I can just do everything more? Just like the Karmi wants more, we also want more. Right? But we are more with a different ideology. So therefore, let us pray to the Lord to always give us that impetus. What the Lord wants to see is sincerity. That's what He wants to see in our hearts. Right? He wants to see sincerity. And if He sees sincerity, then He will take the role of being our informant, to be our guide Himself. Krishna is absolutely so personal with the spirit soul. He is there with the spirit soul. He's the closest thing to the spirit soul. There's nothing more closer. In fact, you can even count the distance. They can even count the distance between the soul and the spirit soul. They're absolutely together. They're almost like united. They're one. There's not even a meson of a space between the two. Right? Krishna says so kindly, Dada mi buddhi yogam tam yena mama upayanti te. Krishna takes it upon Himself. He takes charge of His children, His devotee children, His boys and His girls, right? And all the children of this world. And He says, I will take it upon Myself to give you the impetus, to give you the ongoing inspiration to carry forward. To carry forward. The Dami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mamup. How you can come even closer and closer and closer and closer to Me. That's our goal, to become closer and closer to Krishna. So through this journey of life, before our body catches fire, all our body is going to catch fire, right? Whether you like it or not, there will be fire of an inferno, burning building, which will burn into ash, some accident, or we'll be on the pyre. We will all be on the pyre very soon, sooner more than later, right? Before we go and catch fire, before as this example says, there is fire in this wood. The body is like wood. Before this body actually catches fire on the funeral pyre, right? Let's, as he says here, arouse the soul. A beautiful phrase called arouse the soul, right? Arouse it. When the son of Chitrakuta Maharaj died, the son of Srivas Thakur died, Mahaprabhu came to the house. Mahaprabhu was in Navadvip. We know the story. It's such a beautiful story. Mahaprabhu touched the body of Srivas Thakur's son. He said, why have you left this? Why have you left the home of your father? And put everybody into the ocean of lamentation. Why have you done this? And same thing happened. The soul was aroused. Graphically he was aroused. From a dead state he came to a live state. And he's not speaking like the body now. He's speaking like the soul. So, my dear Lord, by your own sweet will, I was here for these many years in the home of my beautiful father and my beloved mother. And by your own sweet will, I'm now on my journey to the next place. I'm just going to the place that you want me to be. Bless me that I can just, wherever I am, I can serve you. Right? So, he spoke like a self-realized soul, a aroused soul, a pure soul. Not anymore governed by the coverings of the material body. And hearing that, Malini and everybody else was relieved. Oh yeah, we're so happy to hear this, that our son has attained a self-realized state. Right? So before
our all our body is catch fire on the funeral pyre. Let us arouse our soul with bathing the soul with Srimad Bhagavatam every day, with chanting Krishna's holy names every day, eating Krishna's holy prasad remnants, Mahaprasad, every day, serving the devotees and the world of ignorance every day. Right? When we dedicate ourselves to this sacred lifestyle which Srila Prabhupada has given us, we can be sure that our souls will be aroused to the eternal state of being a servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Is there any questions, comments? Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.